everyone, and welcome to another edition of Orlando Magic Live, featuring me, Philip Rossman-Reich of Orlando Magic Daily, and our good pal from Orlando Pinstripe Post, Zach Oliver. Zach, can I play in the second half? I started this late. It's my fault. We're going late today, and we actually went later than the posted time as well. Completely my fault. Can I play in the second half this time, maybe? Maybe?
Yeah, we'll allow it this one time.
Okay, as long as I don't make this mistake again. Thank you everyone for anyone who decides to join us on the show. We're still kind of testing this format out, trying to do an interactive show, kind of as a pregame to the national TV games on TNT, since the Magic don't usually play on Thursdays. But you know, real life gets in the way. The blog life has to be shoved to the side, occasionally, but we're still here. We're still doing the show. And of course, as always, you can catch a replay of this show and I'll post it on the Orlando Magic Daily podcast feed as well. But Zach, we had a really interesting is one word to describe it. We had an interesting game last night with the Orlando Magic taking on the Minnesota Timberwolves. They get back to 500. We had three games since our last show last week, but really the Minnesota game was an encapsulation of a lot of different things that have happened in the last week, even kind of reinforcing some of the things that we spoke about last week. What was your big takeaway besides Scott Skiles using the bench as a teaching device from last night's game against the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Yeah, I think that it kind of will show the young guys that you always have to be ready. You can't, you know, take time off. And we've seen that already this season, you know. We've seen Aaron Gordon's minutes fluctuate from game to game at times. Mario Hezonja hasn't played a ton. So if you're not giving them energy and the defense that the team needs, then you're not going to play. And I thought that that's what really changed the game last night. I think that you would tend to agree with me, you know, Dwayne Dedmon and Channing Frye to start the second half. You know, maybe they didn't make the impact statistically, but they kind of stabilized the team a bit, and they gave them some energy. And then Jason Smith and apparently Andrew Nicholson's still on the team.
Apparently.
Or at least his corpse is. And they both came in and were phenomenal. I mean, they were probably the third and fourth best players on the team last night.
I would really say that that Jason Smith was the one that turned that game around for the Magic. They were just so lifeless in that first half. And I think, I mean, you and I, you know, we're both in the media loge for those games. When the first half came in, we were still kind of in that mode of, yeah, the Magic are getting decent looks. You know, maybe they're settling a little bit too much. You know, maybe they're not completely running through their offense. But defensively, they were giving up some, not doing horribly. They were still within contact. They just needed that one little energetic push to get them over the top. And so Smith comes in. I think when Smith came in for Dedmon in the third quarter, that's when the Magic made their 15-0 run to take the lead for the first time in the second half. I'm not huge into individual game plus minuses, but I think I wrote this in multiple places in the 20 recaps that I did last night. Smith's plus 16 was a legitimate plus 16. He was one of the key impactors on the floor, and you can kind of see why Skiles has trust in him. Like, to me, a lot of these issues that the Magic have had are not just about consistency. It's about who can Scott Skiles trust to play that way that they need them to play every time he puts them in. Who can he count on for certain things? And most of the time he's going to be able to count on Vucevic for, you know, solid play. Most of the time he's going to be able to count on Tobias Harris and Elfrid Payton and Victor Oladipo. But Jason Smith, you know, like, surprisingly, has been a guy that Scott Skiles can really count on, and playing his first game back in almost a week and a half, actually, in almost 2 weeks, I think. Having him back in that lineup was a huge boost to the team.
Yeah, and I think to your point on trusting Jason Smith, and I think we've chatted about this, you know, at games and whatnot, but Smith's team defense has been phenomenal this season. I mean, he doesn't have that pedigree as an individual defender. He's making the right rotations, and we saw it last night. I think one of the plays that really sparked the team and really brought them even more life than they were already starting to gain was his huge block on Shabazz Muhammad, which I saw a replay of that, and that was about as perfect of a block as you could have. I mean, he met him up at the top and all ball. There was no contact anywhere. And then I believe it was Tobias scored a layup on the break to cut the lead down to three. And then next, I think it was the next possession, Smith had a three-point play to tie the game up.
Yeah.
So, you know, his energy and his defense was really the key last night. And that's why he's going to keep playing, because he's been a lot better than I think both of us expect him to be.
Yeah, you know, I kind of made the joke, particularly because one of my writers, at least, is not the biggest Channing Frye fan, but when you look at his defensive numbers with the Knicks last year, they were worse than Frye's. But obviously, numbers don't tell the whole story. Smith has been a good team defender, a decent defender in the past with the teams that he's played for. There's a reason he's still in the league, and he does a lot of these little things that coaches really like. And there's a reason he sticks around. Maybe he doesn't stick around with the same team necessarily, but there's a reason a guy like him is still in the league, and he's proven that again. He's proven to be a key piece for this Magic team. I don't think any of us expected it. We expected him and Channing Frye to kind of seesaw for backup power forward, you know, minutes, especially since we considered Aaron Gordon to possibly start at the four for most of the season. But, you know, Smith's done a really good job in the minutes that he's been given. If I were Scott Skiles, I'd have complete trust in him. It's been really incredible to watch that him develop, and he's been one of the more consistent guys on the team. You know what you're going to get from him, and at this point, that's a big strength. Before moving on, if you're watching this live, if you have a question, go ahead and drop a question in the Q&A section. We'll be happy to answer them later in the show. Zach, you noted that the Magic, I kind of wrote about this earlier today. The Magic are kind of playing to a much higher standard. They're expecting a lot more from themselves this year as far as how they win games, not necessarily just winning the games. They want to win games the right way and kind of grow. But at the same time, the fact that they're winning games and they're winning some of these games really ugly, do you take that as a good sign that hey, they're trying to make progress in certain areas, but at least they're winning? It's not a moral victory type thing. I know that's a dirty word now, but it's still the thing I like to say is they're learning lessons while winning. They're not losing while learning these lessons. They're winning, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, and it is showing signs of growth. And I think that last night Elfrid Payton hit the nail square on the head. If this is last season, they lose that game. Plain and simple. I mean, they probably lose that game by 22, 25 points. I mean, the fact that Skiles is holding them so accountable, and that he'll just go to anybody to find something, whatever they were doing last season, when maybe lesser extent James Borrego would just kind of trot guys out and say, oh, if you make a mistake, it's okay. You stay out there and learn. If you make a mistake, you get yanked and you get coached up. Yeah. You know, I've had some people, how I think that Skiles is handling Mario Hezonja's minutes. I think that he's handling them perfectly. You know, maybe Mario deserves, you know, more than the 14 he's getting a game. But if you put a kid out there and he's making consistent mistakes, he's not going to learn. Like, that's going to turn into bad habits. And we've seen that come back and rear its ugly head against the Magic this season, that those things stick. So, especially if this team wants to move up into that upper echelon in the Eastern Conference at some point, they can't have that. And Skiles is the guy that's making the impact that way, you know, along with the general impact and improvement that the team has made. Because I mean, you and me were talking about this the other night. They're worlds better defensively. Maybe they're defensively, they're a lot better. And, you know, one of my writers, Corey Hudson, wrote about this the other day. The Magic are allowing a lower percentage from every area on the court.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it's, you know, the fact that they're trying harder, but also some of that's the schemes that they're running. And, you know, that's on Skiles. So I would say that last night was a good learning experience. And the fact that they're finding ways to win those ugly games, you know, they did it against the Lakers last week. They did it against the Sixers before that. It's showing signs of improvement. Now they just need to take that next step to where it's a little bit smoother, because there's little to no reason that you should be playing an ugly game against the Lakers or the Timberwolves. No offense to either one of those teams, but
at home at that,
they're probably better than both of those teams right now. You know, maybe in a couple of years, Minnesota is going to be better, because we were both talking about this again last night. Karl Anthony Towns was phenomenal.
I'm still trying to figure out where he came from on that block of Tobias Harris at the end of regulation.
And the underrated thing of that was a really good play that the Magic ran.
That was a fantastic play.
Like, Towns just made an even better play. So, you know.
I mean, and Harris said after the game, you know, if he had a little bit more time, he was going to try and pump fake because he knew Towns was coming. But with 2 seconds left, he had to pretty much just come around the screen and put it up. And again, it's not a play I think the Magic execute well last year, if they execute any at all in that situation. I mean, I haven't worried about any 5 second violations yet. Not to harp too much on that, but it was a brilliant play, brilliantly executed, and just a great defensive play to force overtime. And the Magic did a really good job recovering in overtime to get back into it. And they made a lot of big plays. I thought Elfrid Payton was really big in the overtime. Evan Fournier, of course, made the big shot. You know, the biggest surprise of the season has got to be Evan Fournier. A really rough week for him. In every possible way, for him, and yet he still goes out on the court, played really well against Utah, played really well against Washington, and played really well against Minnesota. With Victor Oladipo out, he stepped up. Where did this come from Evan Fournier? I mean, was this something that we should have expected after how he played last year when he got a lot of minutes and he was healthy? Or is this something that has staying power? Is this a new normal for Evan Fournier?
I'm still not completely sure. I was looking back at his numbers from last season. The first 15 games of last year, he was really good, and then he missed the game with, I want to say it was a shin contusion.
I don't remember the injury either. It was...
Came back, and then, you know, things started going downhill. He started the season out in the starting lineup and then got moved to the bench when Victor Oladipo came back from his orbital bone fracture. So it's hard to say. You know, I think that the sample size is starting to get big enough to where we can say, you know, maybe this is what we're really going to get from Evan. And, you know, Scott Skiles said this, I can't remember if it was last night or if it was Friday night before the Jazz game, that Evan's been one of, if not the team's best defender this season. I mean, and they're throwing him out there against, you know, bigger guys, and he's doing a really good job.
And Skiles has said repeatedly that Evan's more of a natural two, and they're asking him to play three. And that's a huge step up. I mean, that's saying you're going to go from guarding J.R. Smith to guarding LeBron James, you know, against certain teams. And so that's, I mean, to to carry the scoring load. And they've asked him to carry a huge scoring load because, and we'll talk, I think we'll talk a little bit about this in a little bit of, you know, Tobias Harris's scoring is down. Victor Oladipo hasn't had a great offensive year at all. And obviously he's just coming back from the concussion as well. Fournier has really had to take that scoring load really unexpectedly. I mean, because if he plays like he played last year, it'd be like, yeah, you know, he's doing about what we expect, but this team's not where they're at. They're not at 6-6 if Fournier doesn't take this step up. I mean, he might be the front – I mean, 12 games in, but he might be the front runner for most improved player at this point with the way that he's played.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. And then I think that his play also brings up this question. Are the Magic at all regretting not – extending him before the November 2nd deadline? I mean, and if not, like, what is his value, you know, right now? I mean, that was something that we all were a little worthy salary cap getting ready to explode. I mean, he could be playing his way up to maybe close to Michael Kidd-Gilchrist money. I believe he got about 13 a year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think entering the season, I had him. If I were going to give him an extension, it would have probably been like a 3 for 30, like start him at like 10 or 11 million a year. But I, you know, honestly, considering that he hadn't shown that he could do anything consistently, I mean, he was very streaky as a player in that first year with Orlando, and yeah, injuries played a part. But even in Denver, he was very kind of a streaky player. They didn't know. I mean, it's hard to know. And so, you know, Fournier invested in himself by not taking any extension offer. And the Magic said, go out and prove it. We'll, you know, and we'll see if we can match. I mean, it's not like the Magic kid will just let him walk. It's still a, you know, restricted free agency. If your price is right, we'll match, you know, and we'll see what comes up out of it. Victor Oladipo came back last night from the concussion. He didn't look right at all last night. I mean, he passed the protocols. He's clear to go. It's not an issue of him not being ready to play. But is it concerning how Oladipo played last night, or do we need to see him kind of get back more into the swing of things? Was it just maybe, you know, for lack of a better term, you just didn't have enough practice time after being out a week and kind of, you know, being sequestered with a concussion?
Yeah, I think that that's a lot of what it was. We're talking about a guy who went through non-contact practice on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then did he participate in shoot around fully on?
I believe they said he did non-contact for shoot around. He was around. But you know, they got the doctor's clearance. They spoke to the doctors. I think we were told in about an hour after shoot-around ended. And so Skiles said that if, you know, if it were a situation like Vucevic where he didn't know if he'd have him until right before tip-off, he would have brought him off the bench. Honestly, that might have been a better way to handle it, just considering how much time Oladipo had missed and just still getting into the swing of things and not disrupting kind of the rhythm that the team had had. Albeit, you know, the Magic went 2-1 without him. It wasn't like, you know, they were crazy long without him at the end of the day.
Right.
But it might have been nicer to ease him into it.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. And, you know, Victor looked like a guy who hadn't played or practiced in 10 days or 7 days. You know, I think that that was a lot of it. You know, if he looks the same against the Kings on Saturday night, then we might have, you know, a little bit of an issue, because he got that game time last night, albeit only, I believe he played about 20 minutes.
In fairness to Victor, Skiles didn't start him in the second half. He didn't play really well in the first half, but he threw him back in there late in the third, unlike Vucevic. He threw him back in there, and I thought Oladipo started doing some nice things, particularly on the defensive end. Stopped forcing offense. He stopped trying to, like, just take shots like he normally would. He kind of found a role within what the Magic were doing and the momentum that they had built to contribute. And so he found a way to contribute to that comeback in the end. He took a really nice charge, not an easy play to make, you know, coming off of the concussion that he came off of, and the, you know, possibility of, you know, just kind of sacrificing your body that way. We teased this in the last segment a little bit. Tobias Harris, you know, always a lightning rod among Magic fans. His scoring's down this year. But how do you assess his game and what his contributions have been so far? I'm someone that has seen a lot of good things from Tobias, actually.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what you have to say.
I think that we've seen a lot of good things from him, too, even if he isn't scoring the ball at his, you know, normal pace. He's down at, I believe, about 14 a game, which is his lowest mark since joining the Magic. But again, it's 12 games in. He's still doing a lot of really good things that is helping the team. I mean, he's been their best rebounder all season so far. His offensive rebound rate's at a career high, 8.5%. His defensive rebound rate's the second highest it's been in his career at 19.3%. And his total rebounds at the highest it's been. I feel like he's been moving the ball better as well. You know, there are times when it gets stuck with him, but at the same time, it's not happening as often as did last season. And the really underrated thing for him this season, I think, has been his defense. I mean, he's been really good on that end. And we saw it last week against the Lakers. Without Tobias's defense late in that game, the Magic don't win. I mean, Tobias came up with the biggest defensive play of that game, blocking Julius Randle's shot.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, I think he came up with the biggest play, one of the bigger plays of Wednesday night's game against Minnesota, when, you know, some of the media members made a big deal about Jason Smith beating Zach LaVine for that jump ball that set up that final possession with Evan Fournier hitting the game-winning shot. And Smith did a great job working to get the jump ball and then fighting for that rebound. But to me, the play that set that up wasn't Smith beating LaVine for the jump ball. They both kind of tipped it to a little pocket. Tobias was the one that got the 50-50 ball that won them that game, that set up the win for that win there. And while Tobias's offense hasn't been, you know, the 16-7 type game that we're kind of expecting from Tobias, and I think, you know, there's going to be people that say you're getting paid $16 million a year, you've got to score more, you know, to earn that paycheck you got. But he's filling in a lot of holes and doing a lot of different things. He's really, grown as a player because he's doing all these things. Because the big question with Tobias Harris wasn't his scoring. I think the scoring's going to bounce back. The whole team is shooting poorly, especially at the rim. That's going to normalize, you would think, at some point. But Tobias Harris, to me, the question was, can you do other things that help your team win? And so far this year, he's found other things that he can do to help his team win, and has been a really big part of this team. I can't find much reason to complain with Tobias other than the stray ISO ball possession that he takes up. But, you know, you live with that. You live with that with him because he's not bad in those situations overall. You just don't want too many of them.
Right. And, you know, that happens with a lot of these guys on this team. You know, you were making comments last night up in the media loge about or Elfrid Payton taking some poor shots. And, you know, we see it with Victor. You know, the guys are trying to do it themselves, mm-hmm. which I think is part of the going back to the bad habits that they'd built the last few seasons. And, you know, that's going to improve. It will. And, you know, you touched on it. They're putrid around the rim.
Oh, God, they're bad.
Which is weird considering how good of athletes they have. I mean, just no one wants to take contact.
They're very good at getting shots at the rim. They're very bad at making those shots. I mean, because I said this to you last night during halftime in the Minnesota game. I think I said this to you flat out. The Magic are better than the Timberwolves. They're just playing awful. They were getting to the rim and just throwing up bad shots, not getting the ball back out or making those shots. They were completely destroying the Timberwolves in the paint as far as field goal attempts. They just couldn't hit shots. And I think one of the big keys in that third quarter was they forced a lot of turnovers, so they were able to get out and transition more. And then they started making those shots in the paint. I think they shot – I have it written down, but it's all the way on my couch over there. I think they shot like 8 of 11 – in the paint or something to that effect, much, much better in the paint in the third quarter when they made that comeback. And so,
yeah, it was 8-11. I remember jotting that down on my box score as well.
Yeah, there. I think you told it to me actually, and then I double checked it and wrote it down on my box score as well. But you know, there's a good team in there, and like, I feel like something this Magic team needs to grow some confidence and to kind of get over that consistency hump. They need to just blow a team out. Just have a game where they don't have to press in the fourth quarter, and you know, go through this kind of heightened attention and pressure, where they just click on all cylinders and just beat the snot out of a team.
And like, we almost saw that last week against Utah, and then the end of the bench came in, and all of a sudden Utah was within 9 points.
And they lost it, and then the starters came in and brought it back, and you know, maintained that nine point deficit that they eventually won by. But like, they need that like 48-minute game where they catch a team on a bad night and just beat them senseless and beat them senseless for 48 minutes and just have that feeling of, if we do this, we can really beat some teams. Like,
they need to do what Golden State did to Memphis earlier this year when they beat them by 50.
Yeah. And they won't be able to do that to Memphis, but, and like, you know, I hate picking on Philadelphia, but like that Philadelphia game, the Utah game were perfect examples of opportunities, like the stage that this team is at when they have the lead. And they didn't have the lead at all last night. They led by 7 and kind of let that slip, but you know, a lot of tired bodies, because Skiles could not trust a single player out there. But they when they've had leads, they've gotten like 12, 15 point leads, and they just can't extend that out to 20. I don't think they've led only the Jazz by 20 points this year, and obviously they let that slip a little bit when the bench players came in the fourth quarter. The bench players just weren't ready to play. But you know, they you know, there's power in just beating teams really bad, and like, they just need that confidence boost. And it's good to get confidence late in games. It's good to know that you can execute late in games like that. But at some point, you've got to just beat teams. Like the Philadelphia game to me is a perfect example. Like, Utah is a team that you expect to maybe make a comeback. They're good enough. Philadelphia, they were up 15, and they let that lead slip down and had to, you know, fight a little bit to maintain that win. That was a game that 15-point lead needed to turn to 24 and just put the nail in the coffin and end it on the road. And, you know, there's very few opportunities for that in the NBA. You know, sometimes you catch teams on a schedule loss. Sometimes you just catch a bad team. You know, they don't pop up very often. But, you know, the Magic just they need something very tangible and very clear to say, if we play like this, we can beat anyone. And you know, we need a game where we just don't fall into bad habits and just you know, run away with it. And they haven't had that yet. They've had to play they've played what, one game this year that ended with a deficit of more than 10 points? The Indiana game, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
I mean, so that means and even that Indiana game was pretty close for most of the way. You know, so, but ostensibly for 11 of the 12 games this year, they've had to go to the wire. And that, you know, it's not that that's draining, and it's not that they've been unsuccessful. They've been, you know, 6-6 in those games, essentially, which is what you expect when you go to close games. But I always say this when I'm talking to people who bring up, you know, the clutch arguments. Good teams don't win close games. They avoid them. And, you know, a sign of a mediocre team is a team that plays a lot of close games and has to, you know, rely on some randomness to win games. You know, the randomness of making and missing shots on single possessions. The Magic have got to find a way to win some games big and win some games comfortably, in my opinion. And I think that's probably the next step for them.
Yeah, and, you know, you touched on them needing to really go out there and beat the snot out of a team. I mean, I think that they kind of need to catch a good team, you know, to do that. I mean, like, if you go out there and beat Philadelphia by 30, you're going to be like, okay, yeah, we should do that.
They should do that, but they haven't yet. That's the thing.
Like, right.
We talk about the growing process. Part of the growing process is beating teams that you're supposed to beat easily.
Yeah.
Like that's a big part of the growing process.
Yeah, I agree. And then, you know, another thing is, you know, three of their wins this season have come against teams that played in Miami the night before. You know, we're seeing that, you know, Miami two-step or the Florida two-step, whatever the heck you want to call it, you know. The two games against Miami and Orlando, you know, back-to-back, becoming a lot more popular.
Yeah, you see it a lot during the year. And
especially with Western Conference teams.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when you have to catch a team.
And I think they caught Minnesota last night on that. Like, I mean, Minnesota, they slowed down a little bit. You could see a lot of shots falling short, especially in overtime. The Magic had a lot of shots fall short because they had to push so much to get in the game. But at the end of the day, you kind of knew that the Magic could maybe get that extra reserve that Minnesota maybe didn't quite have.
Yeah.
You don't want to use back-to-backs as an excuse. I don't think Minnesota would say that, but you could definitely tell that, you know, they got caught on a road back-to-back at the end of that game.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that Minnesota should have won that game still.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Minnesota should be more upset at themselves for losing that game than the Magic should be proud of themselves for winning that game. The Magic took a half off and still won the game, which is a good thing for the Magic. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's not a good thing, but the fact that they can do that and still win games is
promising.
It's promising. Like, that, it shows that they have the potential, if they put two halves together, that, you know, again, like I said, I mean, I said this at halftime, you know, kind of flippantly, the Magic were a better team. They can play a lot better, and they just weren't doing the things they needed to do to stay in that game. And then they started doing them, and they came back within 3 minutes. I mean, I think that 15-0 run came in about 4 minutes, if I'm not mistaken.
It came really quick. And I tweeted, I'm like, what just happened? It came out of nowhere, too.
Yeah, it just started and just happened. We're running a little bit over here. We're also running late, so who cares if we run over? The last thing I wanted to get to was this week marks, or beginning on Wednesday, but this week and the next week and a half marks a pretty big point in the schedule for the Magic. They're home for six, including Wednesday night's game against Minnesota, home for six of the next seven before they head out west. I asked Skiles about this directly, how he views this point of the schedule, and he said, you know, veteran teams, they'll break down the schedule into segments and say, you know, this is a point where we got to pick up some wins, bank some wins up, because the schedule is going to get much tougher, and they'll do that at the beginning of the season and talk to the guys directly. Skiles' approach said, with his team being so young, being so inexperienced, they've got a lot of things to worry about themselves. Each game, and so they're taking things game by game. But, you know, as fans, as observers, you know, if the Magic are going to make the playoffs or make a run at the playoffs, how important is the next six games where they're going to be home for so long before they go out west for, you know, a pretty always very telling early December road trip?
It's huge. I mean, you know, Skiles, you know, hinted at this during one of his pregame availability sessions. The team, you know, throughout the season, you don't get a ton of practice time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, teams might, you know, have practice scheduled, but how hard they can actually go in those practices depends on where they're at schedule-wise. And this stretch for the Magic, they have one road game for the rest of the month. That's Monday night in Cleveland. You know, they're going to have time to get out there and practice. They're going to be able to work on things. And this was something that we talked about last week that's still a huge thing for them: consistency. Mm-hmm. That's what they need to build over the next week and a half if they want to have a successful West Coast road trip, which you and me both agree that defines the season, plain and simple. You know, last season we saw them play pretty well. I mean, they went 3-3 on that first West Coast road trip. You can make the argument that they should have gone 4-2 if not for Steph Curry being Steph Curry.
He stuffed them. He stuffed up and was big.
Yeah.
Got him.
Zach will
posthumously throw a pen at me Saturday for that.
But they got back on the road trip and then they fell apart.
Yeah. And that was largely at home, that December stretch. So, I mean, the road trip doesn't define everything. Don't get me wrong. As you know, the way the Magic schedule usually sets up is they take three long road trips in the year. There's the December road trip at the beginning of December. They take a January road trip when the circus is in town at the beginning of January, at the early, like the second week of January. And then they take a road trip in March. And usually December's out west. And then the last few years, the January trip's been the second West Coast trip. I think it is again this year. Last year, they didn't take it until March, actually. That one flips around.
The West Coast trip this year is March. 2 years ago, it was March as well.
Okay.
Last season, it was January. Because I want to say that was – they had a game in Denver. On the second night of a back-to-back where they got just – mauled.
Yeah.
And then they finished that road trip in Dallas.
Yes.
And then came back and just laid an egg even more.
Yeah. And I hate when they make teams play a central time zone game on the way back from a West Coast trip. Like a few years ago, they made them go to Washington at the end of a West Coast road trip. It's insane.
That was fun. Good times.
And Glenn Davis came back that game. You know, back when Glenn Davis was someone that you really wanted back on the team. But in any case, the West Coast trip isn't the be-all, end-all. It's certainly going to tell us a lot about this team. And by the end of that West Coast trip, I think we'll have a better understanding of who this team is. Like, stats will have normalized by then. We'll kind of know what this team is really about. And so, like you said, the next 2 weeks is about reinforcing those principles, building those principles and habits, and making sure this team is ready to go out for that challenge. And they've got to pick. I mean, they've got to win just to win. They've got to win. I agree with Skiles. This isn't a team that you can look at any part of the schedule and say this. We need to go 2-4 and 2 in this part of the schedule. I don't think that this team's good enough for that quite yet. They, you know, to use a horrible, awful cliche that Northwestern football uses, they got to go 1-0 every day. If they go 1-0 every day, that's got to be the goal for them. They can't look too far into the future. But at the same time, there are some very big games in this road trip. They play, I think they play Milwaukee, or not a road trip, on this homestand. After they play Cleveland, I think they play New York, Milwaukee, and Boston.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken.
They play New York next Wednesday, Milwaukee on Black Friday, and then Boston that Sunday.
I mean,
before they go out west for 5 in 8 days. So really that West Coast road trip is set up not too badly this year, to be completely honest.
It's not.
They only have one back-to-back, which is at the end, and it's in Denver, in Phoenix. That Phoenix game's a schedule loss.
Probably.
Most likely, because – you know, playing in Denver and then having to go to Phoenix. I mean, that's going to be tough.
At least there's no time zone change, but yeah, no, it's going to be tough. And, and kind of getting back to the more immediate, those teams that they're playing next week. So after Monday's game at Cleveland, which who knows what's going to happen there. Cleveland, LeBron's starting to look a little pissed off, and sorry for the language if that offends anyone. LeBron's starting to look a little angry with how his team is playing, so that could be a long night for the Magic. But those three games next week around Thanksgiving, those are all teams the Magic are going to be fighting for a playoff spot. And you don't want to look that far ahead, maybe, but we already the Magic had a fourth quarter lead at Indiana, let that slip away, and got beat pretty bad. Got handled pretty badly in that fourth quarter. And that already felt like a game that the Magic needed to have banked up for April if they're serious about making the playoffs. And so, yeah, you don't want to look that far ahead, but, these games matter. And, picking up some wins now is gonna help them, obviously. And they're not satisfied at being .500, I don't think. I think they understand that they can do a little bit more. They've just got to go out and do it now. And so the next week's going to be really, really interesting. We're going to learn a lot about this team in the next 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's not the end-all be-all, but I think we'll really know if this team has what it takes to really stick in that potential 8-seed playoff fight in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll be able to preview that a little bit better next Thursday when, you know, on Thanksgiving, when we get back together. We'll try and get together and have a Magic Live to help everyone get to sleep after their tryptophan naps next week. Zach, thank you for delaying Orlando Magic Live a little bit this evening. It's completely my fault. Thank you for letting me play in the second half. I feel like I contributed to this game. Did we win? Did we go 1-0 this week?
We need the official Jeopardy judges, I think, to tell us if we won.
I don't
maybe,
trust them.
Maybe we need to go to the Sports Jeopardy judges and have Howie Schwab decide if we won. But I think that we put together a good performance in the second half tonight, and we can build off this and go and take down the Kings bloggers on Saturday.
Those Kings bloggers are really, really, really tough. That is an all-star crew covering the Kings. But speaking of that game, that's actually a good reminder, Zach, because as everyone's trying to get you to know, Saturday's game starts at 5 p.m. Where's my camera? There it is. 5 p.m. 5 p.m. They're airing the game internationally, 21 different countries. So the international time slot's 5 p.m. So the game starts at 5, not 7. Show up at 5, not 7. Show up at 7, DeMarcus Cousins will already have been kicked out of the game, probably.
Or DeMarcus Cousins won't be playing because DeMarcus Cousins will. No, I know.
He's serving a suspension tonight. But he'll be playing because he'll refuse to come out of the game even if they're up 25 with 3 minutes to play.
Or Vivek Randev will have taken over the team and will just play Boogie until he dies.
But Boogie won't have to play defense. He'll just cherry pick, obviously.
4-5, guys. 4-5. Guys.
Yeah. Well, that Kings game is going to be incredibly interesting. Zach and I will both be there Saturday. It should be an interesting time. Should be a good time. Little late afternoon basketball. I'll be watching, you know, Northwestern on my iPad because I'm crazy like that too. But I'll be paying attention to the Magic as well. Again, remember 5 o'clock tip off on Saturday, not 7 o'clock. The rest of the games will be at 7 because the Magic are never on national TV, at least not till the end of the season, it looks like. But for Zach Oliver of Orlando Pinstripe Post, this has been Philip Rossman-Reich of Orlando Magic Daily. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Orlando Magic Live. We will see you next week.